I'm Jeff Nally. This is the Morning Edition here on the Cromwell Ag Radio Network. We have a guest this morning. Patrick Kelly is with us, the Senior Policy Advisor for the American Petroleum Institute. Mr. Kelly, I'm interested in the API's perspective of the EPA's proposal on volumetric output for 2014. Why do you think it needs to be lowered?
Hi, Jeff. Thanks. Well, what we're really asking is for EPA to hold volumes constant right now. The mandate continues to grow, and what we're asking EPA to do is reduce the increase down to holding ethanol volumes constant, such that the ethanol ratio into gasoline does not exceed 10%.
And the concern for not more than 10%?
That's the vehicle compatibility limit. Vehicles were designed and manufactured to be able to handle 10% ethanol. There are some flexible fuel vehicles that can handle up to E85 and some newer cars that can handle E15, but the vast majority of vehicles out there are only designed and warranted to handle 10% ethanol.
Some of the folks that are concerned about this reduction suggest that it's the advanced biofuels. It's the cellulosic ethanol plants that are coming online now. It's biodiesel. It's some of the others that, frankly, were to provide the largest volume of renewable fuels under the Energy Act. Those are just coming online and realizing that this volume output will strike them as well.
Well, our primary concern with the RFS is the ethanol blend wall and is this compatibility limit with the vehicles and infrastructure. And so, you know, there are other limits to how much biodiesel can be put into the market. That, again, our position is that we should hold constant where we are at 1.28 billion gallons of biodiesel. And unfortunately, cellulosic biofuel, it just isn't there yet. I mean, there have been some dribs and drabs coming out of a few demonstration plants, but we haven't seen commercial production of cellulosic biofuel. And every year, EPA has had to wave that down. And yet refiners still have to pay for credits that for the fuel that doesn't exist in the marketplace.
How did you feel the RIN credits were having an effect into fuel prices?
Well, it's hard to say because the RIN credit is supposed to be there are compliance credits that the refiners need to demonstrate compliance with the RFS. And so we saw a big run-up in RIN prices last year as the mandate was beginning to look infeasible and refiners were and obligated parties were looking to carry as many credits as they could to ensure their compliance for 2013 and 2014. But it's hard to say how that flows through to the system and who it impacts most, whether it be the refiner, the ethanol producer, or the final consumer. And it depends on what market you're in, how that transfer of the cost of the RIN gets passed through the system.
How much of the oil that we use today in our domestic gasoline and fuel supply is from imported oil? And has that changed much since 2006?
There's been a dramatic shift in how much we're using. We're producing about 60% of the gasoline we use, and that 60-40 split has been a shift from when the RFS was passed, it was the other way around, 60-40, and that dramatic shift has really change the energy landscape. And what I mean by that is back in 2007 when the RFS was passed, Congress was looking at this situation of ever-increasing dependency on foreign oil. But that's not the case today. And the increased energy security that we've obtained is more so due to the increase in domestic production, far more so than it has been attributable to the RFS.
All right. I'm curious, there were some calls that are going out across the country, Ohio I know of, and Missouri I know of, and Illinois I know of. A person named Tom in a robocall from the American Petroleum Institute. What's the goal with these calls?
It's part of our nationwide outreach effort to increase awareness of the problems of the RFS and the ever-increasing ethanol mandate. Right now, EPA has a proposed rule that's under review, and they're accepting comments from the public. And so what we're doing is trying to encourage people, let EPA know that you support their current action to waive the standards down such that we don't breach this ethanol blend wall.
So is the object to let citizens' energy comment for the person they call?
Yeah, well, what we want is people to raise their own voices, and that's what we're looking for. And we've had a tremendous outpouring of support from people in all states, and we're looking to cultivate that. We want the public to speak up and show their concern.
Well, the script, if you text it out, suggests that special interest groups are pushing the EPA to increase the amount. The result could be higher food prices and damaged car engines. What do you mean?
Well, the food price, I mean, that's according to several studies, including those done by the National Academies of Sciences, the agriculture group within the UN. There's various independent analyses that show that the food price, global food prices are impacted negatively by, or I should say that they increase because of our biofuel policies. We've also heard a tremendous uproar from the pork producers, from the beef producers, chicken and turkey producers. They're very concerned about our RFS policy and what that does to their costs. And on the vehicle side, there's been extensive research from the automotive industry and our industry looking at E15, and we're concerned about the results of engine durability and fuel system problems that were found when vehicles were fueled with E15.
Well, in prepping for our talk here, I went to the Economic Research Service and looked at the CPI scores for food costs in the U.S., and I looked from 2006, and I see the figure. And then I see it precipitously fall into 2009. And yes, we did come back up between 2009 and 10, but we are still below 06 levels in terms of the cost of food for the country. So I realized we had two drought years, and I realized there were shorter supplies and livestock producers were affected. But I'm really interested to see now that, as the USDA suggests, we're doubling the carry of corn, that food prices would be higher for U.S. producers or U.S. consumers when they haven't been over the past few years.
Well, I think we've seen ethanol volumes held pretty constant since 2010. And what we're concerned about is how much additional corn goes into the market to produce more ethanol. And when obviously we're spending about 40% of our corn crop is going into ethanol production, and the corn producers have certainly increased their yields, they've increased the amount of acreage they're planting, but the increased acreage is often at the expense of other crops, and so that's why it's not necessarily just the price of corn, but what the overall policy does to land use across the country. We've also heard from groups like, well, the Associated Press put out a series of articles about what was the impact on conservation land. And so these are areas that are a little outside of our normal concern as the oil industry, what we focus on, but we're really trying to amplify the voices of these other groups who are also raising concerns. And I want to make sure that it's understood that this is not a big oil versus ethanol in terms of market share. This is really a broad, diverse group of interests that are very concerned about our ethanol policies.
Well, I'm going back to the text. It does say special interest groups are pushing the EPA, and then it says it encourages that we need the EPA to stand up for American families and resist these extremists. Well, are you talking about farmers and veterans groups as extremists, or who are you calling an extremist here? I'm interested.
Well, we've actually had support from various veterans groups, so no, I certainly wouldn't call them extremists. But who I am calling extremist, and API is calling extremist in that call, is the ethanol supporters here in Washington, because they're failing to acknowledge the logic that you can only put so much ethanol into the gasoline supply, and to go beyond that is infeasible. There's not the infrastructure or the vehicle compatibility to handle those additional volumes.
If we reduce the volume of ethanol, will it change the price of gasoline?
It's hard to say, because every market is going to be different. And when you look at what the cost of gasoline is, there are so many factors that go into it. The principal among them is going to be the cost of crude oil. But you've got everything from distribution down, and ultimately, one retailer is going to set his price according to what the retailer across the street is setting his at as well.
With regard to transportation costs and to food, that's really where my question was, because a whole lot of the price the consumer pays, yes, there's the base of the product, but then there's the labor, and then there's the packaging, and then obviously the transportation from point to point. So my question was, if fuel prices are higher, could we assume that food prices would go up?
I mean, when food producers are you know, they have a whole array of costs that they need to incur to be able to produce their product. So, you know, transportation fuels is one of them. So is, you know, the crops and other inputs that go into their process. So all of those inputs will dictate what the final product price is, and the marketing as well. So the fact that it's an input, I would say, yes, it would have some influence on the price. But that's not to the exclusion of all the other inputs that go into a food producer's cost structure.
Is EPA doing a good job on renewable fuels?
Up until this year, I would have said no. This year, it's very good to see that EPA has taken a lot of positive steps in the right direction and acknowledging that this ethanol blend wall is a real dangerous problem for the American economy. So I think at this point, I tentatively want to say yes, they're finally starting to open their eyes.
All right. Then the other, I guess the last one as we wrap up here, regardless of their decision, do you think you'll wind up in a courtroom?
That's hard to say. I mean, we have litigated the cellulosic mandates from 2010, 11, and 12, and that's part of the reason why EPA is looking to rescind the 2011 cellulosic mandate as part of this rulemaking, and we support that. So it's too early to say at this point, but you know, time will tell.
Patrick Kelly is with the American Petroleum Institute. I'm Jeff Nally. This is the Morning Edition. Good deal, sir. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.